I hope you can join me next time when we continue with The Street Lawyer by John Grisham. This has been Renee Ford Clark for GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Eyes on Success, followed by Men's Health Magazine at 1:30.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas community update.
Sherwood Church of Christ, 4900 North Dixie Boulevard, offers free clothing on the first Saturday of every month. With so many families in the community are losing their jobs due to COVID and the downturn in oil, the Sherwood Clothes Closet is an opportunity for people to find needed clothing items for the entire family. Hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 74 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
One day, my dad bought a computer for us for Christmas. Probably like half a year later, the computer was in my room exclusively. No one wanted anything to do with it. So that was kind of how I got into sort of the computer science stuff. So it just went on from there.
That is the incident that started off the journey of today's guest, who eventually wound up being the accessibility evangelist for Apple Computers.
We'll speak with Dean Hudson about his long and rewarding career in technology and how he got there. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Dean Hudson.
So this feature is if there's a guy here, his last name is Tram, but the speech synthesizer pronounces it as Tram. And what you can do for custom enunciation is you can actually voice Tram, and then Alex will speak it as Tram the next time.
It learns from you saying the name then?
Yes, it learns from, it gathers speech data points about what you're in the consonants and how you are phrasing the word, and then it will use that or teach Alex how to say that word.
I guess that's why they call them smart devices.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2021 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC.
And by
NaviLens, a four-color QR code designed to be located and read from up to 60 feet away without the need to focus on it. Personal places and items can be tagged and shared with family and friends with codes obtained inside the NaviLens app, available for iPhone and Android. More information is at NaviLens.com.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Success. Let's start by meeting Dean and learning about his current job at Apple.
So, Dean, we talked with you a while ago about what you do as an engineer at Apple, but today we wanted to talk to you about some of your personal experiences growing up visually impaired and getting employment down the road. But maybe for people who may not remember you, you can introduce yourself.
Sure thing. I am Dean Hudson. I am employed at Apple for, I think this January was my 15th year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. and started off in engineering and worked there for about 10 or so years, and then moved over into more of evangelism and marketing for accessibility at Apple.
And what does evangelism entail?
That entails meeting with several groups outside of accessibility orbit and making sure that their devices, their products are accessible, or at least they're thinking about accessibility when designing their products and projects.
And you are the perfect person to be in that position, because not only is your background in engineering, but you are visually impaired yourself, correct?
Yes, I am visually impaired. I am totally blind. However, we don't just focus obviously on blindness. There's other disabilities that, you know, we try to keep in the forefront because it's important that, you know, technology is for everyone. And so it has been a bit of a aha in some sense, because it's like, well, I know about the visual aspect, but what about if someone couldn't hear very well or does not have the physical ability to use this technology? And so it has opened my mind up a bit more to start thinking about other disabilities.
Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners. Underwriting pairs the impact of targeted marketing with the integrity of community goodwill.
Learn more by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is Dean Hudson's path through childhood, education, employment as a computer scientist, and now accessibility evangelist.
Today, we wanted to talk about your life and journey as a visually impaired person from when you were young until you got educated and eventually got a great job at Apple and some of the other previous jobs you've had. Maybe we can start out by telling us a little bit about what it was like growing up as a youth and realizing that you were visually impaired. You were a little bit different than other folks.
I was, and I have to say that during those days, I did have some vision. Wasn't very much, but I could see shapes and colors and that kind of thing. Enough to be able to ride a bike, actually. And to be honest, I never really saw myself as very different. Now, maybe it's because at that age, you know, you're driving, you're not really doing that many things very different. And when we did play sports, you know, someone would hit for me and I'd run or things like that. So I didn't really feel blindness. In fact, I remember my dad asking me, you know, what I want to do, and I said, oh, I want to be a cop. So I didn't really even think of it as that this is an issue until later on when, you know, other siblings were getting their driver's license and other things like that. And then, of course, you know, going into school and needing special equipment and stuff like that. But even so, there's still a bit of that in me where I don't really think about having a disability. Something may take longer for me to do, but it's very few things that I just feel like I can't do because of my vision loss.
You know, I have much the same feelings and much the same experiences when I was younger. And as you say, even now, you know, I don't really think about myself as being blind. It's just that, you know, we're both differently abled.
Yeah.
So when you went through school, say high school and starting college, did you have to use special equipment and special resources?
Yeah, I did. Grammar school, it was fine. It's one school, but my father worked at IBM, so we'd have to move. We moved a few times within the Bay Area. And every time, you know, my mom would have to get on the phone and find a school that had, you know, special resource room or teacher that could, you know, assist. So I had that. And of course, they taught Braille and typing, that sort of stuff. When I went to college, two were things I wanted to check out in terms of a career, either an engineer. There were a lot of mentors that were at that time at Stanford, and one of them was strongly encouraging me to be a hardware engineer, and he even took me to a lab at Stanford to check out some of the equipment, or computer scientists. And I ultimately went with computer science. That was very different because at that time there weren't that many screen readers out there. I didn't even know what a screen reader was, actually.
And when was this?
This would have been 1984.
Well, the screen readers were pretty crude back then.
Yeah. And, of course, it was in DOS. But the funny part is that speech synthesis was also pretty rough. I think the college, San Jose State, managed to buy a $6,000 DeckTalk speech synthesis.
Wow. They were pricey back then.
But before that, before I had any speech, I would use readers. So some poor sucker would come with me to the computer lab while I'm banging out code. They'd have to, you know, I'd compile it, I'd get all these errors, I'd have to step through each of the errors, and, you know, I'd have to wake them up sometimes. And
oh, geez.
You know, the show must go on.
So were these other computer science students, or, I mean, so at least they knew how to read code?
Oh, no. This was, so the college had a disabled student services where they would hire students, just general students. I very rarely had someone from computer science. They'd be from, like, journalism or, you know, whatever else, English majors.
And you were interested in computers from when you were very young, I take it.
Yeah, so in addition to wanting to be a cop, one day my dad bought a computer for us for Christmas. I wasn't allowed to use it by myself because my dad was afraid that, you know, perhaps if I touch some parts that are exposed, the oils from your fingers would get on it and ruin it and that kind of thing. But that didn't last very long. I would say probably like half a year later, the computer was in my room exclusively. No one wanted anything to do with it.
And what were you doing for input-output at the time?
Yeah, so that was during the time I did have some vision. So this computer, TRS-80, had two modes. It had a 40-character line mode or 32-character. And I had switched it to the largest 32, and I'd just basically be smelling my monitor the whole time. So
that's the way I used to read at that age.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was kind of how I got into sort of the computer science stuff. So it just went on from there.
So as a student, I know you said you had readers. Did you have any kind of magnification system you were able to use?
No. So by the time I got to college, maybe my second year, my vision went completely. I had a bunch of retina detachments and it was gone.
Ooh.
So no more magnification. But there was a time when I would look at stuff under CCTV, mainly to see if a girl in the yearbook was pretty or not, but that was all.
Well, you know, fortunately, it sounds like, again, you and I went through some similar experiences. As our eyesight diminished, the technologies improved, because I'm guessing by this time, you started to be able to use the first refreshable braille displays, speech synthesizers were better, there were such things as CCTVs, and if some of this had happened a few years earlier, those tools and technologies may not have been available.
So you probably remember the VersaBraille?
Oh, the refreshable braille display.
Yeah. The school had one, and because at that time I was the only blind student, they loaned it to me. And, you know, it uses a cassette tape.
Yes.
And it's pretty primitive. Well, I happened to be moving out of my apartment, and I thought, you know, I don't want to lug this with me right now. Let me just leave it in the laundry room, and I'll come back and get it. Of course, it did come back, but it was not there. So I thought, oh, man, this is a, what is it? Back then, was a $6,000 device, something like that?
Oh, they were very expensive, yeah.
And so I didn't know how to confront. So I go into the disabled student's office one day for totally something different. And the director said, hey, Dean, you know who that VersaBraille is? I'm like, oh, well, you know, and then he pulls it out from under his desk.
Phew.
He said, you know, I don't know if you have an angel over your head or what, but some ladies have to be driving on 101, saw this thing, and thought it could be, you know, someone might have lost something. And then she looks on it, says property of San Jose State, and she turns it in. And I'm just like, wow, okay.
Boy, did you get lucky.
It's like, did I use up all my blessings on that one deal? Or?
But that was really kind of a life-changing technology. It had to make it a lot easier to interact with computers and do some of the work that you were expected to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, today, I think, you know, people don't appreciate that when I had to go to a study group at college, it wasn't like, you know, I'll just bring a couple of papers. It was like, okay, we're studying chapters 1 through 5. That's 5 volumes I need to carry, plus a braille to take notes.
You had to be a muscle man to carry that stuff around.
Yeah, exactly.
Was there any particular mentor that sort of encouraged you to go into computers and science, or were you essentially self-directed at this point in your life?
So there was. I had two mentors. One in high school, which is really more of your kind of just a character-building person. We talk a lot about disabilities and interactions with folks. But then in college, there was another mentor in the Disabled Student Services office, and she actually passed a few years ago. But she is the one who sort of helped me rationalize, like, okay, yeah, you can be a hardware engineer, but look at all these jobs open for software. And then she kind of swayed. But I think I was already naturally sort of hooked into programming at that point. That it just seemed like an easier thing to grasp onto. So
yeah.
It is so valuable to have an adult who has your best interests at heart and who knows enough to be able to assist you get to your goals. You know, parents can be very well-meaning and very loving, but if they don't happen to be specialists in the field that you're trying to get into, you really can get a lot of benefit from some of these teachers.
Yeah, and that's very true. Not just for your education, just lifetime roles and you know, your character, as we said before. It's really important that if you have someone, take advantage of that, because it is helpful.
Well, you eventually went on to get your degree, and then it was time to look for a job. How did that go?
Well, towards the, I'd say my junior year in college, one of the counselors was nudging me to, I should really get involved in this engineering science club. And she said, you know, you should fill out this application. Go down there and fill it out, and, you know, you could get an internship. And I've just put it off. So, yeah, whatever. It wasn't until, turns out, they were doing some construction outside of San Jose State, and they rerouted the buses to an area where I had to walk right by that department. And I thought, well, since I'm here, I might as well fill this thing out. And 2-3 weeks later, I got a call from a manager at IBM and wanted to know if I was interested in doing an internship there. And that's kind of where it started. And so I did 2 years there, my junior year and senior year. And then I graduated, was looking for a job. And I thought, why don't I just call my old manager? And then again, 2 weeks later, I get an invite to interview at IBM.
Wow.
That's where I started.
You know, those internships in college, I think, are so important. I think it's almost criminal for colleges not to offer internships. There's one thing about learning material from books, but having the real experience of working at a job is very different. Plus, as your experience indicates, you wind up making connections that you can use later on to get your foot in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as you said, at the time, I didn't think very much of it. And, you know, if they hadn't done construction, I don't know if I would have got that internship.
When IBM hired you based on your application for an internship, people always talk about, should you disclose or not your visual impairment? What did you do?
I disclosed. I mean, there was no way around it, right? I had a cane, and you're just not going to. But I honestly think he saw this as an opportunity that I might have not gotten. And I think he really felt like, you know, this is something that, because it was back in the 80s, and, you know, there just wasn't a lot of opportunities. Someone would see that you were blind, and they would just think, no way, you can't do this. But he didn't think that way. And so, yeah, I've always felt comfortable disclosing if I'm doing in-person interview.
And this he was your hiring manager, I assume?
Yes, yeah, for the internship.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, and also, I've had the experience when I applied to Xerox out of graduate school, I just sent in my resume as anybody else would. When they called for an interview, that was the first time I told them that I had a visual impairment. I said, you know, when you meet me at the airport, I'm the guy with the white cane. And I asked them about that later on. Did they have any misgivings about that, or what was their reaction, you know, after I was hired? And they basically said, you know, look, we figured if you got through graduate school and were successful there, you know, you had that all under control, so that wasn't an issue.
Yeah, I think that was the same experience. I mean, I did the over the phone interview where I answered a bunch of programming questions, and I kind of think that was their feeling. And at IBM, once you go to be hired full time, you interview with several different teams, and this never came up. It never came up about, well, how are you going to do this, or how are you going to be able to complete this? And I think a lot of them knew that at that time IBM was working on a screen reader or had built a screen reader already. So that made it a little bit easier. I mean, and, you know, it was IBM, so they could just, whatever you need, you know, Braille embosser, Braille display, we'll just buy it all. My office was filled with just all kinds of tech.
That is the great thing about working at a large company like that. I had the same experience at Xerox. Anything I needed, I mean, money just wasn't an issue.
Where did you go after leaving IBM?
I went to work for a nonprofit Sensory Access Foundation, which helps people with accommodations for jobs. So we'd go and evaluate someone's job and say, this person needs this. And it would just infuriate me that some cases, you know, I'd go and tell someone, hey, look, you know, you're going to need a Braille display for this. And, oh, no, you can't tell them that. That's too much. It's too expensive. I'm like, look, you know, you need this. If you want to continue or to be competitive in your job, oh, no, I cannot. And then, you know, you explain to them that the Department of Rehabilitation is willing to pay for it. Still, they're just so gun-shy. And I guess it's maybe from past experiences of being put in a situation where you're told, you know, use what you have. If you can't make it work, then, you know, we'll get someone else. So
yeah,
very fortunate to not have to go through that.
Yeah, which is really kind of interesting because although these technologies tend to be fairly expensive, when you compare it to someone's salary and you amortize that over keeping the employee for a few years, it's really not such a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. But it's amazing that now things are much more faster, much more advanced, a lot less bulky, and you can do a lot more with one device. You know, you remember the days when, you know, if you wanted to write something in Braille, you had to have a Braille writer, and then you had to have a scanner, and then you had to have an embosser, and then, you know, it was crazy.
So you said your first job was at IBM, and then you worked at the nonprofit, and then you went from there to Apple?
No, I went from the nonprofit to a startup. Me and a friend of mine got funding, and we were going to develop a note taker using Windows CE back then. That's what was the thing going.
I remember.
And we developed a prototype, actually. But unfortunately, we found out sometime later that this guy was part of a Ponzi scheme, so the money that we got was not really pure.
Oh, that's
Ooh.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like it ended well then.
It ended fine for us. He did go to jail, it was sort of a disheartening reality because, you know, we were pretty close.
And what happened after that?
After that, I worked for another nonprofit, Lighthouse San Francisco for the Blind. And then I saw on some message board somewhere that Apple was building a new screen reader. And I applied and got a phone interview. And I guess, they had someone else in mind. So about a year and a half later, I saw the same position come up. Now, in this time period, I decided to really kind of beef up my programming skills because it had been a while. So I started learning Visual Basic, C++. And even started working on like a little project of mine, like a music player or just a 3D audio program. So I refreshed myself in object-oriented programming. And by the time the second opportunity came up, it was a lot different. And that's how I wound up getting this position back in 2006.
And that had to be a great time when some of these accessibility technologies built into the Apple devices was starting to take off and really mushroom.
Yeah, I mean, it was still, compared to now, it was still sort of early days. But I did like the direction Apple was going in terms of just ease of use, plug it in and it works. I remember probably about my third month there, my uncle passed away. And I was going to get a ride to the funeral for my brother. And so my aunt sent over the directions. I was like, all right, let's print these out. And I had, I don't know, some HP scanner or whatever, plugged it into my PC. It's like, you must update the drivers on this. And I do, which model of the HP printer do you have? I was like, there's no one here. I don't know which model it is. I can't read the model number. And my manager had given me a MacBook, titanium MacBook. And I thought, you know, why don't I just plug it in here? Plugged it in my MacBook. It's like, see that you have an HP 401 whatever. Would you like to install the drivers? Why, yes, I would. And then I was able to print the directions. I was like, okay, this is the place to be working for.
Apple was very good about those easy-to-use, user-friendly designs.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have a great position there now at Apple and can actually change things for the better for not only the visually impaired, but all kinds of people.
Yeah, you know, I think I mentioned this before in the other interview that, you know, you sometimes it's hard to see the forest when you're in the trees. And, you know, every once in a while I'll turn on a podcast where someone's using our technology and I think, wow, this really is impacting people's lives.
But that has to feel good to know that you were a part of all of that.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I don't exaggerate when I say that, you know, it's life-changing. Like, the things that people are able to do that maybe they did before, but it was far more complicated and harder. And I think that's the most exciting thing to get out of it.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success. Success.
Now, for this week's final item, how to learn more about accessibility of Apple products and how to contact them.
So, Dean, what kind of resources would you recommend for our listeners to learn more about Apple products?
I strongly recommend checking out the apple.com/accessibility. We've actually done a whole new overhaul on the site. There's a bunch of how-tos and a lot of sort of deep dives into features for our platform. So it's a really good resource. And I believe there's even a contact address if you wanted to email in questions. So it's a great place to start.
And for people who have questions or they notice bugs in their devices, how can they submit that feedback to Apple?
So to submit bugs or suggestions, you can email us at accessibility@apple.com.
And you monitor that along with some of your other colleagues?
Yes, lots of people monitor that.
And I make frequent use of that. You guys are always good about responding and trying to get bugs and suggestions into the system. We appreciate it.
Keep them coming.
And another group that we often hear great things about and from is AppleViz.
Yes, they have been pretty fantastic, and they're really good at holding our feet to the fire, you know, just really making sure that we're staying on top of things, as well as I think they do a great service in the community because they, for each update, they list the different features, they list any bugs, and so it works out great for us as well.
And it's also a great place just for users to interact and learn from each other about how to use the various applications and devices. A very friendly community.
Yeah, I'd say that, and Mac Visionaries as well is pretty good. In fact, that's where I actually started when I was preparing to interview here at Apple. I was like, I should just join this user group so I can learn something.
And as usual, we'll have all that contact information in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. We'll also have a link to the previous interview we did with Dean about some of the new accessibility features in iOS.
That's it for show number 2118. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about accessible cloud technologies. Numa Solutions offers a suite of accessible cloud services geared to the needs of the visually impaired. We'll talk with co-founders Mike Calvo and Matt Campbell about Ciro, as well as how Scribe for Meetings and Scribe for Education transform documents to make them accessible in a wide variety of formats for web events and personal use.
And we hope you'll join us next week for that episode.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Men's Health Magazine, followed by USA Today at 2.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Aphasia Center of West Texas has scheduled a tribute to the legendary Queen and Freddie Mercury. Live and virtual options, May 7th. She's a killer queen, got that agility. The Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Scholarship is available. To sponsor, make a reservation, or for more information, call 432-699-1261. Or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert. Call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert.
Sunday afternoons, we take you around the Lone Star State for 3 hours, starting at 2 p.m. with Texas Monthly Archives. At 3, it's the current issue of Texas Monthly Magazine. At 4, Travelin' Texas. And at 4:30, Texas Gardener. Sunday afternoons, beginning at 2, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 76 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello. And welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health Magazine here on site, Indisound Radio. In First Dump, the power of uncertainty. Not knowing what to expect breeds stress and exhaustion. But all this uncertainty, when you know how to deal with it, can actually leave you more resilient. Here's how to get there. After a year of staying mostly at home, I've come to understand certain things about mice. Mice hate open spaces. That's why they hunker down inside walls and cabinets instead of lounging on the sofa. Exposed environments are unpredictable, which make these spaces seem dangerous. Unsurprisingly, when a team of researchers placed mice in an open portion of a maze, the rodent scurried for an exit. Neurons provoked by anxiety started popping off like fireworks. The more anxious the mouse, the more the neurons were activated, and the more likely they were to try and flee. That's according to Dr. Mazen Kirkst, an assistant professor of psychiatry at University of California, and one of the authors of the study. I feel for those jittery mice. I have bolted on two occasions in the past month alone, once from the grocery store, when a woman in the produce section unleashed a voluminous sneeze, and again while I was hiking and heard yipping and rustling in some nearby brush. squirrel, coyote, mountain lion? Faithful uncertainty, I behave like your average risk-averse rodent. I fled. Uncertainty is one of the most insidious stresses humans and other mammals face. Studies of both people and rodents have shown that it's less stressful to know what you're about to receive an electric shock than to think you might get one. Uncertainty disrupts your ability to forecast what will happen in the future, making you anxious, hypervigilant, and more likely to overreact to upsetting or worrisome news or events. Our brains are pattern makers, but we can't make a pattern out of what's happening now. We haven't lived through a pandemic, nor have most of us lived through this level of political or social divisiveness. Again, Dr. Christine Carter of UC Berkeley. As a result, we perceive ambiguity about the future as a threat, which explains why the times we're living in are so darn agonizing. In the American Psychology Association 2020 Stress in America survey, 65% of respondents reported feeling uncertain and related stress. Why uncertainty keeps some people in a perpetual state of jumpiness and others, well, not, is partly due to personal history and biology, and partly about coping skills. Your temperament and prior experiences affect how well you're able to handle uncertainty, says Carter. If you've been dealing with discrimination all your life, or you've suffered other types of trauma, you'll have fewer emotional resources available to cope with the challenges we're all facing right now. It won't be easy for you, as it might have been for others. Yet no matter what your background, you can build your tolerance for uncertainty, even through chaos, protect yourself against stress surges, and end up more resilient. Here's your four-step training plan. Number one, streamline information. Googling everything about a complex topic offers an illusion of control, but over-researching can compound stress. Ambiguous or conflicting information undermines certainty, says Dr. Ellie Huang, Associate Professor of Marketing at Tuck Business School of Dartmouth College. Before you start searching, decide on the question you need answered. Bookmark a handful of trusted sources, institutions, or media outlets that have a long history of reliability, truthfulness, and transparency, and do your research there. Same thing goes for getting info from, say, your doctor. When news of the COVID vaccines first came out, Dr. Kwan asked an immunologist friend to explain them. She was telling me about RNA and different kinds of proteins, and I felt completely overwhelmed. So I thought about what I really needed to know. I didn't need to understand the biology. I just needed the bottom line. Now that you've saved yourself from vitality-sucking rabbit holes, you can have some energy back. Energy to act on what you know, rather than just worry about it. Two, actively surrender. When Christina Koch, a NASA astronaut, began her 11-month mission on the International Space Station in March of 2019, she had no idea how long she was going to be in space. I remind myself frequently that at the end of the mission, I want to be proud of how I handled it and what I contributed. So instead of worrying about how long I'd be there, I focus on accepting the fact that the time frame was out of my control. Science bears her out. Accepting your situation and not fighting against it, not letting it frustrate your signals, not letting it frustrate you, signals to your brain that you're not under threat. If acceptance totally doesn't come naturally to you, Dr. Carter knows your pain. Here's how she learned to get there. I sit quietly and visualize the circumstances I'm struggling with, Then I say to myself, I surrender resistance to this circumstance. I also notice how I'm feeling, exhausted, afraid, unfocused, whatever. Acknowledge and accept that. By seeing what's happening and not wasting energy on being stuck, you're also practicing the superpower of being honest with yourself. 3. Appreciate the unfamiliar. For most situations, we rely largely on rational, analytical thinking, says Dr. Leonard Bidlow. We've all had to learn to adapt everywhere we've turned, and that required elastic thinking, which is more emotional and intuitive and helps us cope with change. Exposing yourself to unfamiliar things, like different art, music, and food, it helps you foster elastic thinking, which in turn powers up your resilience for when you meet all kinds of challenges. And finally, 4, stay moving. So remember those skittish mice with the fired up anxiety neurons? When scientists used a new genetic trick that allowed them to turn down the activity of those particular neurons and plop them back into the scary open space, they were less anxious and more interested in exploring the situation. Instead of genetic hacking, try exercise, which triggers the growth of new brain cells that helps keep anxiety neurons from being in control. Just how you like it. And now this month's cool dad was Jesse Taylor Ferguson, an Emmy-nominated actor for Modern Family. And he has a cookbook, Food Between Friends, out now. He writes, kicking and screening. Smartphones and babies are like beer and liquor. It's really not a good idea to mix the two. That is, until a pandemic hits. Years ago, on a trip to Disneyland, I remember sitting on a bench in awe. It wasn't being in the happiest place on earth that had me speechless. It was observing a toddler in a stroller, watching a video from an iPad. At Disneyland. Here we were in a man-made ecosystem, literally engineered to promote imagination, stimulation, and joy, and this kid was watching a cartoon. It wasn't even a Disney cartoon, which really annoyed me. My husband, Justin, and I made a vow then and there, right next to the Dole Whip cart, that we eventually become dads, we would be hands down, no screen time dads. Smash cut to July 2020 during a global pandemic. Wake up, Beckett. Grandma wants to meet you on FaceTime. Parents had warned Justin and me the first few months of a baby's life are like a press junket, revolving door of well-wishers who ask you the same questions 500 different times. To complicate matters, Beckett is the first baby on my side of the family. My parents are divorced, and I have siblings in various time zones. And then there was the technology. When I call my mom to walk her through the downloading WhatsApp, she's an Android user, you would have thought I'd put her in a cockpit of a space shuttle and said, now just fly it to the moon. Thankfully, a neighbor was able to help her figure it out right as I was about to overnight her a new iPhone. Justin and I made it to practice to have Beckett's video chat with my mom a few times a week. She's not sure how to reply to a text or click on a link, but she sure did learn about answering a WhatsApp call when Beckett was awake. Seeing my mom's wet eyes as she looks at her first grandchild still hasn't gotten easier, but she is a trooper, knowing that this is better than nothing. It won't be forever. Family has a capacity to love in surprising ways. Even though my mom hasn't been able to hold Beckett yet, the sight of him rolling up in a green blanket she crocheted for him is almost as heartwarming for her. Almost. Beckett, on the other hand, not only recognizes what a screen is, but also has a full post-nap, post-milk agenda. I'm sorry, Grandpa. Your grandson has a busy schedule this afternoon. We can try to squeeze you in tomorrow at 4:30 if you can make yourself available then. I notice now how he clocks his phone. He clocks my phone when it's in sight. He knows that shiny rectangle is something interesting. If I glance down at it, when a test message pops up, his eyes follow it. I often find myself thinking, this is so weird. Justin and I look back and laugh about the time we foolishly made that grand proclamation under Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Hear ye, hear ye. We shall be parents who say nay to devices. Screen time with family when you can't see family isn't screen time. It's the best connection we have, given the circumstances. Justin and I have had to embrace the fact that part of being new parents is continuously figuring things out and letting expectations go. And that's what I've been ultimately come to understand. No proclamation as a parent is helpful, and especially one made at Disneyland. If you have a plan for how something is going to be, you also be prepared to be wildly disappointed. It's okay to pivot and change it. Just know that the new plan will probably change too. I need to take a moment here to remind you that you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on Sight into Sound Radio. You can listen to Sight into Sound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at sightintosound.org. We are Sight into Sound Radio since 1967. And now, the new vital signs. Sure, you get your temperature checked all the time now, but if you haven't set foot in a doc's office since the pandemic started, you probably don't know how you're really doing. Consider these your new essential at-home vitals. Number one, heart rate recovery. It can tell you about heart health, your body's ability to ferry oxygen to your muscles during exercise, known as cardiorespiratory fitness, CRF, is such a powerful predictor of how long you'll live, the American Heart Association suggested making it an official vital sign. The gold standard for measuring CRF is a VO2 max test. In an exercise lab, or with a fancy watch, there's a way to estimate it easily and track its progress at home. You test it. Well, check your heart rate recovery. The fitter and healthier your heart is, the more quickly it adapts to the demands of exercise, and the faster it slows down when you're done. So right after intense exercise, stop and check your heart rate. Check it again after a minute of rest. A difference of 20 beats per minute or more points to good heart health. Well, how do you improve it? Consistent exercise gets this number where you want it to be. For more immediate drop after workout, breathe exclusively through your nose as soon as you're able. This forces your breathing to slow down and activates your body's natural rest and relaxed response. Vital sign number two, sit to stand agility. Can tell you about longevity. How well you can sit on the floor and stand up unassisted, harder than you think, and give clues to how long you'll live. Needing support means you're at risk of muscle imbalance, mobility issues, and later on, falls. You test it, well, start standing and give yourself 10 points. Sit on the floor cross-legged, stand back up. Subtract a point every time you use your hand, knee, forearm, or side of your leg for help. Research found that those who score 0 to 3 were 5 to 6 times as likely to die over the next 6 years as those who scored an 8 to 10. You can improve it by work hip mobility and pigeon stretches so you can better position your feet to stand. Also build strength with squats, lunges, and hip bridges. Vital sign number 3, semen quality, can tell you about your urinary and reproductive health. Ejaculate is a little bit like saliva. It can indicate how functional or how irritated the glands that make it are. You can catch potential problems by regularly looking at it. Caveat, if you're concerned about fertility, a glance won't reveal the quantity or quality of your sperm. You need to talk with a doctor about being tested for that. There's no way everyone's ejaculate should be. The key is keep an eye out once a week for changes, color, smell, or volume. These can point to troubles in your urinary tract, the glands that make semen, or your prostate. How do you improve it? Call a physician if you see blood. There could be an infection. If you're producing less than a third of a teaspoon, or if a smell or volume shift lingers for a few days, it could be a cyst or a prostate issue. Vital sign 4, alcohol use. You can tell about drinking control. Official guidelines say guys should cap booze at 2 drinks per day. There's good evidence that 1 drink a day has a lower risk of death and other problems. Test, check if a 6-pack lasts you a week. In my household, no. How do we improve it? Of course you're going to reach for beers, if there's nothing else enticing. Fill your fridge with some of the new, surprisingly good, non-alcoholic beers. And vital sign number 5, feeling awe. It can tell you about your emotional health. Positive emotions can help sink stress. And one that does it better than others is awe. The wonder you feel when you see a shooting star or an amazing sunrise. Stress can cause anxiety and rumination and make you turn inward. Zooming out helps you decenter and break that cycle. Awe is a major trigger of decentering. We test it? Well, it's as simple as asking yourself if anything struck you as awesome today. How do we prove it? Shots of awe are easy to find. The TED talk that completely changed your understanding of something. The colors that show up in grease floating in a puddle. Awe can strike you anywhere. Just let it. And now, a dentist guide to less time at the dentist. The great part about being a dentist in this decade is there's almost nothing we can't fix. And that's always been true. That has not always been true. But much of that stuff shouldn't have to be fixed in the first place. Hear what he does to take care of his own mouth and the health problems that can start there. Get this shot. If you hadn't turned 45 already, I'd rush out and get the HPV vaccine. It is recommended if you're between 9 and 26, and optional up to age 45. The presence of HPV increases the incidence of oral cancers, which hit men twice as often as it does women. This cancer used to happen in older guys who drank and smoked, but a quarter of cases now are in men younger than 55. Oral sex can transmit HPV, which may cause as much as 70% of oral cancers. Skip the nightly grind. You absolutely have to give your body a way to get rid of stress, or you'll try to expand that energy another way, and often that grinding or clenching your teeth at night. It's your mouth's version of tossing and turning. Since the pandemic began, my colleagues and I have been an uptick number of people with broken or cracked teeth. I'm no Olympic athlete, but I do take my two pups for long walks each day to help me relax. Physical activity is an excellent way to reduce risk. Fine scissors. I use my teeth for meals, not for opening bottles or tearing off tags, which can break and chip your teeth. Over the years, I've had to do plenty of dental work on people who use their teeth as tools. Same thing for people who don't wear a mouth guard while playing sports. Swish, swish, swish. Along with a manual toothbrush and unwaxed floss, I use an oral rinse, aka mouthwash. Food and bacteria left in your mouth can cause inflammation in your gums, since the blood vessels there connect to the rest of your body. That's potential trouble all over. Inflammation can cause pain in those with rheumatoid arthritis, even affect your heart and brain. Look for an ADA-approved antiseptic oral rinse to reduce the amount of inflammation causing plaque and bacteria in your mouth. Let your mask tell you something. Any mask will make you more aware of your breath. The more highly filtering kinds, like surgical masks, will amplify the effect. And I've been wearing a mask for years, so I know. If your oral hygiene has been lacking during COVID-19, that smell in your mask is a solid reminder to clean up your act. And drink more water. If you're dehydrated, any odors are going to be magnified because there's less rinsing away of bacteria and food particles that cause odors. And now, a question from Ask Men's Health. Anton of Norfolk, Virginia asks, I'm overweight. My doctor told me to exercise, but didn't give me any specifics. Should I walk, run, lift? The answer, start with activities that are easy on your joints. Excess weight can put stress on your ankles, knees, and hips during exercise, which may lead to injury. So use a recumbent bike or an elliptical, or go for a swim, and aim for at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity per week. One way to break it up is 5 days with 30 minutes of exercise each day. Remember, weight loss is complicated. If you're unable to lose excess fat on your own, you may need to discuss other treatments with your physician. Men's Health asks readers what they want to do in the next decade. And here's some replies. Nate, 33, says, the next decade, I don't even know what day of the week it is. Sandy, from 28 years old, I want to box, do MMA, and become a personal trainer. Stan, 37, become a paramedic, continue keeping fit, look after my family. Eric, 42, to be able to keep working on myself physically, mentally, and emotionally. Become a better father and husband day after day. And finally, Tom, age 60, with an answer close to my heart. Retire. Get a place in the country, preferably in the mountains. Get a couple dogs. Well, we have come to the end of our program. I've been reading Men's Health magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore. And this has been a production of Sight and the Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
West Campus Testing Site extends hours. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow extended hours for COVID-19 testing at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. The testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68 Nurse 686-8773 to make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured, according to the release.
Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, The Street Lawyer by John Grisham. Michael Brock is billing the hours, making the money, rushing relentlessly to the top of Drake and Sweeney, a giant D.C. law firm. One step away from partnership, Michael has it all.
Then in an instant, it all comes undone. A homeless man takes nine lawyers